The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep, with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over a million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Beyond, and hello everyone, my name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, episode 646 of IGN's weekly PlayStation show. I'm joined this week by Brian Altano.
Hey, baby.
Wonderful, that classic catchphrase as always, and we're also joined this week by Max Scoville.
Yes.
That other classic catchphrase that we're all known here for on the PlayStation show. Anyway, we do have a lot to talk about actually this week, even though, again, Sony will not give us specifics about the PS5. Chances are those specifics will go live 20 minutes after we record. But we did get a decent amount of information, thankfully, after the Ghost of Tsushima State of Play, thanks to an interview we were able to do here at IGN. And we got a little bit of a teaser about the PS5 and games coming soon. We'll get to that in a second. But if you are wondering why we're not going super in depth on the Ghost of Tsushima State of Play itself, it's because we recorded a second episode last week. So if you happen to not catch that episode and you're not subscribed to any of our feeds, go check that out. Go subscribe. Go hear all of our thoughts about that. And we will have some of your thoughts later on in this episode. But first, I did want to talk about that nebulous announcement that news is coming. So we got word from Sony, the parent company-wide Sony CEO, saying that, quote, we will soon be announcing a strong lineup of PS5 games. And that's pretty much it. We don't have a date or any sort of window or how that will come about, but we know that they are now saying Sony will be announcing a slate of PS5 games soon. And so that could mean first party games. It could mean exclusives. It could mean just multi-platform games. We don't really know, but I don't know how you guys feel, but being stuck, like, it's nice to hear that the top of the company is acknowledging the PS5, but it's still in this weird nebulous soon way.
Right. Yeah. I think their best bet is to jam together a whole bunch of third party and first party announcements at the same time. I don't really see them coming out with like this gigantic lineup of first party stuff announcements. Like that feels well, first of all, you have like two of their biggest studios are still shipping product in the next few months. Then you have, you know, what Santa Monica's, it's going to take them. I honestly don't think we're going to hear anything about a new God of War game for a while or whatever they're working on. And then you have like Media Molecule with Dreams and stuff like that. Like there's a bunch of stuff that just happened. And even, you know, Sony Bend, like, I feel like I don't think that they're ready for any new announcement. I mean, we really just got, it wasn't too long ago. We got Days Gone. It's still getting updated. I have a feeling we're going to get a lot of sort of like, here's the like special edition PS5 editions type stuff. Like there'll be a lot of like kind of PS4 games on steroids. There'll be a lot of like, here's, you know, confirmed third party stuff. There'll be a lot of like games as a service stuff that we expect on launch already. Some announcements we know, some announcements we don't. I think the best idea for them is to just jam as much information in as possible, but I'm not really expecting a ton of big first party stuff right now.
Yeah, I think the announcement that they plan on announcing things is sort of infuriating. I feel like we see this a lot from CEOs. Like Bob Iger was always doing that, where he's like, "Yeah, we got the Poe Dameron show in the works or whatever," and people are like, "Wait, what?" And it's like, you know, he just blurts something out in an earnings call, and it's like, "There's no Poe Dameron show that I'm aware of." I was thinking of Cassian Andor, but anyway, right. You know, he just blurts that stuff out, and it's like, you're the head of the company. If you want to announce some stuff, maybe, you know, kick marketing in the ass and be like, how do we raise some like brand awareness and how do we get people excited about what we're working on? Because to sort of being like, hold on, it'll be ready in a minute is like a non-announcement yet again. Yeah, I would take anything at this point. I think any kind of teaser, I would take some sizzly logo reveals. You know, maybe like we got our first look at the PlayStation 5 in the forms of a still image of an obvious logo and two and a half pictures of a controller. Like maybe a video of literally anything. Like we got that sizzle of like PlayStation Studios or Sony Studios or whatever, and it's like just make something to make some buzz, make some hype, just get us excited about literally just like any little thing. But yeah, I know what you said about first party studios, I think is kind of a given. I mean, I imagine they're probably going to buddy up with a few third parties and do some exclusive reveals and like you always see. Just like for the love of God, just give us anything, just anything, just.
The first party beat that you've both brought up is really interesting because I was looking back at it. The last time we got like really big, proper, far-reaching sort of announcements about first party games was 2017. We got games like Concrete Genie was announced that year, Ghost of Tsushima was announced that year, and then of course Uncharted: The Lost Legacy and Last of Us Part II were both announced 2016, same PSX. We got Spider-Man and God of War at the same time, I believe. Sony really put everything out there between like 2016 and 2017. And so it has been years since most of their first party stables, save for, of course, like MLB and stuff like that, that we've seen anything from them new. It's really been sort of a like the final three-ish years of this cycle have been what first party has been working toward. And now it's this weird, quiet mystery of where do they go next?
I think that's good to a point. Like I've praised them for this because I think that if you do a little info drop and be like, hey, it's almost ready. If you, you know, announce a game 3 years in advance and then pop up every 6 months to be like, check it out, here's another trailer, people just lose interest. Whereas flip side of that is like, if you don't have anything to say, people don't have anything to look forward to.
I totally agree with both of you guys. I feel like in a normal era, like in a random ass E3 year, it's kind of a faux pas to just show a logo for something that doesn't really exist yet or won't for a while. But I think that at the dawn of a new console, when you want to get people invested in this like ecosystem for the next few years, that's sort of okay. It's still cheating and it's still kind of dirty, but it is
context.
Yeah, you're going, okay, yeah. Like if you get this thing in November, you are buying into a system that will eventually deliver X, Y, and Z. And like to clarify real quick on what I said earlier, we only named a few studios they own. Like I didn't even scratch on, you know, Insomniac or anything like that. And not that I'm expecting them to deliver a launch game, but I think that if they say, hey, we're working on something that could happen in the next year or year and a half or 2021, then you know, all right, I'm buying this thing in November and I'm going to kick around, play some of my favorite games on it, play some games of a service, third party stuff. But in 2021, I'm getting Spider-Man and Venom or whatever.
I did want to bring up Insomniac as an interesting case because, of course, they're the most recent acquisition and they are a studio that does have multiple teams within it working pretty consistently. They had quite a bit of output this generation, both on the PlayStation side, but also wider. You know, they started, of course, with Sunset Overdrive. They did even a smaller game that was published when GameStop was trying to get into games publishing. And of course, they did Ratchet & Clank and Spider-Man. Like they tend to be pretty prolific, and then that's not even counting their VR output, which presumably is going to go toward PSVR now. So I wouldn't be shocked if we see something for them, like you're saying, within the first year. That seems
how weird would it be if Sunset Overdrive 2 was a PS5 launch title? That would be very strange.
I mean, they announced a Banjo-Kazooie for the 360 years ago.
Yeah,
you know, that was weird as a Nintendo fan, but yeah. That would be a very strange back and forth. Go ahead.
I was going to touch on this, but like thinking back to the PS4 reveal event, and they just dumped like a ton of games on us all at once. One of those games, if I'm not mistaken, was Dreams, which came out 2 months ago or three, whatever, you know, whenever it came out. It's been a strange year, but like I think people are extremely forgiving with you know, what determines a launch title. And I think that there's sort of, we've come to expect like, oh, it's not so much like day and date system launch title. This is a launch window title. And occasionally there are delays that come with that. And yeah, I don't know. Like I think to get, again, like to sort of touch on what Brian said, like to to get people excited about a new ecosystem or a new platform, that you get a little bit of wiggle room to be like, to kind of hype it up a little bit during, right, like during a normal E3, it's sort of bad form to show, you know, your next 5 years worth of game releases, because then people just sort of get like spoiled almost. But mm-hmm. in this case, I feel like it's really weird that we're this close to a new system and we don't own any games for it.
So do you guys think that, cause to me, the best approximate in another industry would be like Marvel. We know the next 7 Marvel movies, and then we know 3 or 4 more release dates beyond that for untitled Marvel movies. They announced that stuff years in advance. If Sony said, because realistically we all know by sales, probably sequels to Spider-Man, Days Gone, Horizon, God of War, all of those are probably coming. It's a pretty safe bet. Do you think if they said, hey, we are working on those 4 exclusives for PS5 for, you know, projected for years to come, but if they said we're working on those games, they're not going to come immediately, but they will be on the system. Do you think that would be a good move, or just kind of a like, why bother move?
I mean, I think that's a great move. Like to what Max just said, we have no idea what the system is launching with right now. Like, I mean, I'm trying to think how long in advance we knew what games were launching with Switch. We still don't really know with Xbox, but we know, you know, there's going to be a new Halo game. That's at least part of it. And they at least started talking about games recently. It's a weird situation. So I do think if they said, and yeah, I feel like first of all, the more this conversation goes on, the more the studios are going to tumble out. Like you just mentioned Horizon Zero Dawn 2 or whatever we're calling it, Zero Dark 30. That's another one that's just like, oh yeah, that's a huge ass game. They could conceivably put that at launch. You mentioned the Marvel thing. I think that's a really good comparison. I think another really good one would be something like HBO or Disney Plus. Like when you see those sort of sizzle reels where they take a song and they put up a whole bunch of footage to it. And some of it is like shows that came out already, and others are shows that are coming out soon that maybe only have a few seconds in there. Like I remember like they've debuted like 4 seconds of like Game of Thrones trailer or footage of the new season back when people cared about that, before it shattered their hopes and dreams.
Well, that's how they padded out like the PS4 and Switch launches is having a bunch of indie games sprinkled in within the big sort of more AAA stuff. Yep. The other thing that we haven't seen that would also be fine in addition to all the first party studios is one of those sort of splash screens that just like, here are all the studios currently working on PS5 games. I think that would go a long way, and we could speculate about it. But like, we saw that at the, think at the last Xbox thing, we've seen that you know, a million times, where it's just like a bunch of like little, you know, and it's like some of it's like a no brainer, where it's like, yeah, of course, you know, of course Ubisoft is making a new video game for a major system, you know, but like it a little bit goes a long way right now. So,
yeah, I would argue that it's going to be if you want to see that splash screen, you can just watch the Microsoft conference and then like take away 3 logos and then maybe add 3 logos. Like, I feel like it's going to be pretty similar. I would be amazed with rising development costs in the coming years if we don't see outside of like first party and second party exclusive titles, if most third party games don't come to both systems. Will they be timed exclusives? Possibly, depending on how much money people want to throw their way. But I don't think, for example, I don't think we're going to see a ton of third party exclusive games for either system that like Ubisoft is not just going to make like an Assassin's Creed exclusive to one or the other. Like there's so much money to be made across the board, including with PC now too.
Yeah, they with Ubisoft especially, like their one console exclusive I can think of in recent memory is Mario plus Rabbids.
Right.
That's obviously a very clear partnership. So yeah, I agree. Unless we see like direct partnerships, like whatever likely Bluepoint is working on is probably one of those like with PlayStation direct partnership things. I agree. We're not probably going to see too many of those as we go into the next generation. It'll just be nice to know what we're going to see soon.
I was going to say, you just named another one like we totally gloss over. Like that's we're starting to cultivate like a pretty compelling wish list for what a launch window year could look like. Like you throw a Bluepoint remaster in there, you throw Horizon 2 somewhere in there. Like there's some stuff to work with.
You think about Japan Studio, which has multiple teams working in it, whether it's the Astrobot team or the Gravity Rush team has been very silent for a while because mm-hmm. 2 came out so long ago. There are several teams within that single studio that could easily be working on 1 or 2 launch window, launch year sort of titles. So yeah, there's a lot we could be getting And I did actually ask people what their dream announcements for the PS5 launch would be on Twitter. Thank you to everyone who responded. Most of the usual suspects are there, like Spider-Man, Ratchet and Clank, Horizon Zero Dawn 2, whatever you want to call it, God of War 2, etc. I agree, as we've been talking more and more on the show, and it's something Lucy has brought up a few times as well, I don't think we're going to see probably those big sequels, the Horizon, God of War, or Spider-Man at launch, because I do think they're going to let those devs take their time to develop them as they need to for the PS5.
Mm-hmm.
But a few of the other interesting ones that I saw going around, let me see if I can find this one. Several people suggested SOCOM is something they'd like to come back, including Evan on Twitter mentioned SOCOM. I feel like that franchise is pretty much put to bed at this point. I'd be surprised if that's what they brought back.
I would be amazed if that came back too. I feel like the sort of Rainbow Six franchise has sort of stepped in on that entire territory. I think they have the ability to pull up you saw people lose it over Tony Hawk last week, justifiably so. I think, like, while many of us might have moved on from franchises like that, I think like something like that still holds a lot of brand value, and you can get people really excited for saying, hey, we're bringing back SOCOM. I'm not really one of those people, but I could be, you know, pushed over the edge if the game looks cool enough.
Totally. And speaking to Tony Hawk, a lot of people, including Willie and several others, mentioned just any type of remasters. A lot of people want to see stuff remastered, whether it's, I believe, Evan, another Evan, or I don't want to get names wrong, but yes, Evan mentioned Metal Gear Solid 1 and 3, not 2, remastered.
Man, what the?
I don't know. But
is he trying to piss me off? Like, why would you do that?
Take it up with Evan. Willie suggested
Infamous. Nothing more for me. I'll just take a little bit of Twin Snakes. That's all. I'm kidding, obviously.
Some people, of course, saying like just something that would really be surprising. Like, of course, there's the expected franchises, but I think a lot of us with a new generation do want to see risks being taken with new franchises trying to be established. And then perhaps my favorite suggestion was Jamie said a Smash Bros. Type of game with PlayStation characters. Never mind. I don't think we're going to see it.
Been there, done that. We could try it again. The problem with the game, that's such tough territory. It was tough territory to step on when they first made that game, and we were already in like a post Melee world. And I think it's even tougher now. The other thing is, like, Max and I were talking about this the other day. I feel like, and I hate saying this, but I feel like we're getting close to Kojima once again being like, I'm ready to talk about my next project, and it's a PlayStation 5 exclusive, and it's a blank, whatever it is, something insane. And then we can spend the next 4 years going on that roller coaster again.
I mean, outside of the PC port of Death Stranding, like, they really haven't indicated there's a DLC or post-launch plan for that game in any way. So, no. And he's, you know, tweeted about thinking about next project. So yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if we get into that scenario again soon.
No, it doesn't seem like that's a games as a service. It's not going to keep growing or evolve. I mean, they're probably patching it quietly for the, you know, people still playing it, but I think he's ready to move on to something else.
Yeah. And just like he's ready probably to move on, we're ready to move on to our next topic. What a great transition. I did want to talk, of course, this week, even though we did do the second episode last week, about Ghost of Tsushima, because after the State of Play, I was fortunate enough to talk with Jason Connell at Sucker Punch, who is the creative director and art director for Ghost of Tsushima. It's a lot of responsibility for this game. And we talked about a few different topics about the State of Play. And so I want to go in depth on it a little bit, since this is a conversation we had. You can read all of my breakouts on IGN.com. But one of the more interesting things he brought up to me that I want to talk to you guys about was that essentially why they're moving away from Infamous's karma meter. And Infamous from the start had been such a big, like, choose whether you're going to be good or whether you're going to be bad. And replaying Second Son recently, it was that weird feeling of, I don't like being bad in this because I'm just having to murder everyone while still trying to save people. Like, that disconnect didn't really work for me in that framework. And Jin, the protagonist of Ghost, seems to be someone who is at least going on a seemingly, you know, an act of vengeance or trying to exact revenge on invaders. Like, they are trying to deal with this war that is threatening his homeland. And so obviously there's something virtuous to what he's trying to do. But they said they wanted to move away from the karma meter because, quote, we thought about it because we had the karma system in Second Sim, but we realized it was more important to us that we wanted to tell a human story of someone who is this way and has to then evolve into something else versus transform completely into something else. So he doesn't flip-flop back and forth. It muddied it up for us. We really wanted the story to reflect his transformation. And that transformation is essentially as Jin becomes the ghost, this like legendary figure. How do you guys feel about them taking that bit of what's become a pretty big Sucker Punch motif out of their games?
I'm totally okay with it. I love it.
I think that that system is it felt almost like mandatory in games 10 years ago. Like, I think it worked really well in Infamous and, you know, Red Dead, and then Mass Effect had, like, you know, Paragon and Renegade. It's like it was everywhere for a second. And I think we just got kind of burnt out on it. And at the end of the day, if you're going to have something like that, you really have to commit to telling multiple stories. Like, you have to really commit to branching paths. And if that's not the kind of game you're making, it doesn't really make sense to have that in there.
Yeah, they Connell really spoke to Jason really spoke to the fact that they do want to tell this very, it seems like a very specific story when it comes to Jin and the invasion of his home and everything with that. And obviously, like, honor and dishonor, given its inspiration from samurai films, plays a big part in that. And so at some point in the story, Jason was saying, you know, this change does happen and Jin has to go on this path and he becomes the ghost. But one thing I wanted to bring up, because I know there was some discrepancy for some people, you don't essentially choose between being the ghost or the samurai in the gameplay. Like, these are things that kind of you go back and forth between what skills you want to use, what tactics you're employing. As Jason said, he's like, in his heart of hearts, he is a samurai. This is how he was raised. This is what he's come to learn and believe about life. But he's becoming and taking on this role of the ghost because he needs to in order to evolve and deal with what his homeland is being threatened. And I like that sort of, like, he's taking on this, but they're not forcing you to be like, play stealthy or play action.
Right. No, I love that. I think that I've grown to sort of appreciate the kind of like deliberateness of a story and like the plan of a developer rather than the total freedom when it comes to that stuff like that. Cause I think that doesn't mean the entire path and the entire game has to be guided. I mean, you're going to have infinite freedom in that game when it comes to combat and exploration and upgrading and so many other things. But I do think the sort of morality system being applied to every game is not necessarily something that I'm necessarily interested in anymore. I think like it can work and I'd love to see it used again, but making it a sort of mandatory prerequisite for every open world game or every game period, like Max said, like it was for a while there. I'm happy to kind of see that dip out a little bit.
I also don't like it being so obvious. Like, I'm totally cool with a game that has different endings depending on how you play it. But I think to have like a visible gauge or meter, it kind of gets in the way of actually being able to like make, you know, have a morality system of your own. Like, I love it when a game is like, hey, you were a real jerk this entire time. And here's a sad ending. You piece of shit. Like, like, and then, but flip side, like if you're constantly like, you're like, if I kill the guy, I get the little red icon. And if I beat him up severely, I get the blue icon. It's just such an odd, like, it feels, you know, kind of juvenile, I guess. And I feel like games have come a longer way. Like Last of Us is a perfect example of that, where like that's a fairly like rigid and linear story that, you know, puts, you know, player choice. I mean, there's not a ton of choice there, but it's telling its story and it's you are being an accomplice to that story, which is, that's where it gets interesting, I think.
Yeah, and I was going to say that I think that's what a lot of people have a problem with in terms of a lot of games, because, or in terms of a lot of media in general, is because they have a sort of preset vision of what they want to see characters do or become. And this is not just The Last of Us. This is across, you know, Star Wars, Marvel, everything, every big Game of Thrones. And I think that there's a path that will make most people happy. And then there's a path that will kind of split the audience, and there's a path that'll make most people unhappy. And it's kind of tough to find that and also find your narrative as a creative person. Although I have read that, like, when given the choice in games like this, a lot of people do choose to play good at the end of the day anyway, because I think that there is that mild voice in the back of their head being like, you know, don't screw this up. You're going to get the bad ending. Everyone's going to hate you. You're going to ruin all your friendships. And people ultimately play video games as sort of escapist power fantasies, and they don't really want to screw up, you know, like they want to be heroes, I think. So,
yeah, especially a game tied around, for Infamous, at least, like being a superhero. Obviously we've seen fun adventures from villains, but it tends to be when they end up being more like heroes that we end up really sympathizing with them. So I can understand why people end up playing more as good. But speaking in terms of that player choice and everything, Jason also spoke to me about sort of the scope of it. And he did say, like, this is Sucker Punch's biggest game, obviously by like square footage of the world, of course, but also just in terms of how much content they put in. And he said, like, their style of development for them is really just like rigorous testing and iterating and continuing to improve upon stuff as they see what works and what doesn't. And so they've been really keeping in mind both players who are going to want to just like go through the main critical path of this game and just experience Jin's story, as well as everyone who's going to want to also find every little thing that this game is encouraging you to find within its environment, which I think is great, especially for, like, it's so interesting to come in as the sort of last PS4 first party exclusive with this history, especially of this generation of like story driven, open-ish world, some fully, some more and some less so, narrative driven games, and see what worked and what didn't all of that time.
Yeah, no, I love that. I also love that this, I feel like Ghost was a kind of an underdog in the sort of PS4 ammo clip for a while. Like, it didn't really seem like people knew enough about it. It felt like it was sort of living in the shadow of The Last of Us in terms of the two of those games coming so close. And I think this combination of people, to be frank, not being super excited about what they've read about The Last of Us, but also finding out so much more about Ghost, and realizing that it's maybe way more of the game that people kind of want right now, just like this big, cool open world game. I think it's completely escapism. It's completely removed from the current climate that we're in right now in the world. And I feel like The Last of Us kind of had the bad luck of releasing, you know, a kind of pandemic video game during a pandemic reality, whereas this is a game about, you know, getting lost in the mountains of Japan. Like, it's
simpler times.
Yeah, simpler times, exactly. So not to put the two against each other, but ultimately I think that, you know, video games are expensive, and people will, you know, if they're standing in a store, if we ever have those again, hold both of these things side by side and go, you know, which one's the better option right now. I think that more people will go with The Last of Us because it's got the name brand and the value of being a sequel. But I think a lot of people are starting to pay attention to Ghost of Tsushima, and that makes me really happy, because it looks very new, despite being this sort of iterative combination of a lot of systems and things and that we've seen before in video games.
Yeah, it's I'm really excited by what that state of play showed us and what that, like, the teases of the world really afforded us. And it seems like the entire team at Sucker Punch really kind of has that in mind of making this an adventure that you can really just get yourself lost in, and finding ways that people are going to be able to just lose hours being guided by the wind or seeing foxes or birds that lead you in a different direction. That really seems to be like at the core of what they're trying to get at is this curiosity. Yep. But another interesting thing that kind of came into their like playtesting and reiterating or changing things up as they learned more, he mentioned to me that, because I was really curious about this, that film grade and cinematic mode that's going to be in there from the jump, where you can play in black and white and it looks more like a classic samurai movie. I was wondering, because this game is so much about like visual cues and especially the colors of the world, and how that would impact the game when it's black and white and you can't see that tree is yellow over there, or, you know, X, Y, and Z about the game isn't as legible. And he said that the work that when they started playing the game through in that film mode, it actually made them change some stuff up to make the whole game more readable and more accessible in a way, because that's essentially, they were looking at accessibility modes and like, oh, if we have the same symbol, but it's differently colored to mean three different points on the map, no one's going to know what's the difference between those if they're in the black and white mode and things like that. So it actually it benefited the game design and the readability of the entire game as a whole for players and the accessibility of it for them to be testing it in this mode too, which I really appreciate.
Oh, cool.
I love that so much. I was like really, obviously really excited about this. I think that was the first thing I said about this game. And I went on Twitter. I like took a bunch of screenshots of the live stream and I was like, hey, this is awesome. I'm excited about this. Like kind of Kurosawa mode. And I got like these, I think some of them were probably like, you know, trolls or like Xbox snobs, but they're also like a bunch of like, there were a bunch of like film nerds in there who were like, this looks revolting. Watch a real Kurosawa movie. This isn't even black and white. This is just desaturated. And I was like, it's a screenshot from my laptop of a YouTube live stream that happened 11 minutes ago. Like, sorry to rush it, but like, I got so mad about that where it's like, just maybe give the AAA multi-million dollar years in the making video game the benefit of the doubt that it will look better running natively on, you know, a $500 or $400 box and a 4K TV than it does on a F-word YouTube stream. Like, just... Anyway, it's great. Yeah, everything's fine these days.
No, on that note, like I think we did say it on the Ghost of Tsushima episode. If you haven't, go rewatch that stream in the 4K upload that's on the PlayStation channel or on IGN's channel. And we also have in all of my breakouts a gallery of 4K screenshots that Sony like natively took of the game that do show off how just how beautiful this world is, whether it's in the full color version or the black and white mode. Like it is just a gorgeous game.
Yeah, and if you want an idea of how that game's going to run on like a PS4 Pro, just put a small sort of box fan next to your laptop and put it on the loudest setting, and then or just maybe like pull up some YouTube videos of like jets taking off.
Have a dog growl loudly in your ear while you're watching, and it really sells the PS4 Pro experience.
Take your hair dryer and turn it on, and then put it in the dishwasher, and then run the dishwasher.
I remember crying at the end of God of War. It's like one of the only video games that's made me cry in the last few years, and it's just like I'm just like sobbing, and the ending credits are playing, and I just hear like. I was like, God damn.
I don't know how to tell you this, man. That was the PlayStation crying too.
Yeah, I've actually now taken to whenever I'm playing a big game that I know I'm getting emotionally invested in, I delete more off of my hard drive just in case it helps a little bit.
Oh man, space. Is that real? Is that anecdotal?
I don't know. No, I like it. It just makes me feel better if I'm like, oh, the hard drive is freer so that the whole system can run better. I don't know if it does.
It's got more room this time around.
Exactly. Yeah.
The game will know you're taking it seriously because there's no other games on your dashboard.
Exactly. It matters more to me because it's the only game on my dashboard right now.
God of War is not like shoving through the crowd with all the horses and Red Dead and their big balls. Get out of my way.
Anyway, speaking of PS4 Pros, I should mention before we move on, Ghost of Tsushima is out July 17th. Former IGN editor Andrew Goldfarb works at Sucker Punch. Didn't influence our decision to talk about this game. Anyway, moving on to the PS4 Pro. If you are looking for, hopefully, maybe it'll be quieter. I don't know, because the more recent ones have that new power cord. Sony did announce today The Last of Us Part 2 will have, of course, a limited edition PS4 Pro bundle. This edition is a little bit different from a lot of the other ones that we've seen before. Normally it's sort of like something painted on top of the PS4 shell or, you know, some sort of like decal design, something painted on. This one is Ellie's tattoo, which has become really one of the more synonymous like bits of art from the game that people associate with it, has been etched into the PS4 Pro. And so this is a bit more like built into the hardware itself, while the PS4 Pro controller has Ellie's tattoo also on one of the handles and also the logo on the touchpad. I don't like the logo being on the touchpad, but they did that.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank. A website today, it was Kotaku or Polygon, I believe, tweeted out about how like they basically did like an op-ed. Totally sorry, I'm not remembering who did it. About why like it's they don't really like logos on controllers and consoles, and I'm inclined to agree. I think that like in the same way, I don't generally wear a lot of clothes with like a ton of logos on them. I think it's like if you had something that was subtle but still evocative of what the game is doing. I'm not crazy about this one particularly, but the etching technique is awesome. I'm a little bummed that it took them so long in the system's life cycle to do something like this. Maybe they've done it before and I'm drawing a blank, but like I know they did. There's like they've done it on touchpads on some stuff, like the Star Wars controller has, you know, Star Wars etched in, and it's
not
like
really, that's I think that's just like a embossed decal or something. It's not even
is
really,
it? It's, yeah. It's like raised. I mean,
no, I had a conversation with somebody about this a million years ago. I can't remember who it was, but we were talking about how like it comes down to the second you start. I could be mistaken here. I'd actually love to hear if somebody has input on this, if they want to write in anonymously or whatever. But I believe it has to do with like if the second you start altering the actual form factor of the device, it has to go through like that many level of processes and approvals. Like it just becomes an entirely different procedure as opposed to being like we slapped the logo on it or slapped the decal or whatever or changed the color of the plastic. But the second you're like actually altering the design of it, it gets like into a weird like. It has to go to a different jurisdiction.
Oh, interesting. I wonder how they got that. Was that Pikachu N64 that had the big leg?
Oh, yeah.
That's yeah, a really good point.
That blue and yellow one. Yeah.
Yeah. It had just like a giant 3D embossed Pikachu on it. Yeah, that's fascinating. That actually makes a lot of sense. I'm not crazy about this design specifically, but I also like if this game had come out 3 or 4 years ago, or even 2 years ago, maybe it'd be a different conversation. As of right now, like if I don't need to see another PS4. Like I'm sold on the system. I've adored it for a very long time now. The Spider-Man one a couple years ago was awesome. Like, you know, I even liked the Death Stranding one last year. But it's 2020 and I want to see a PS5. This is awesome news for people who've waited this long for a PS4 or are a desperate need for an upgrade because theirs is loud or broken and they're not planning on getting a PS5 for a long time. But for me personally, I'm not in love with design. I wish it didn't say The Last of Us Part 2 everywhere. And I wish it was a PS5.
Yeah, I like the engraving technique a lot. And I do hope they do stuff like that in the future because it does lend itself to more unique designs for sure. And it is more of a subtle thing. But yeah, I just wish the words of The Last of Us Part 2 were not on the front of the system that'll probably be facing you while you're playing all the time, because you're only going to be playing this game so often. Yeah, but I'm glad they're, you know, honoring this game with that. It would be a little weird if we got, I know it's the end of the life cycle, but if they'd been doing all these limited editions and then we're like, for this game, that's a long-awaited sequel, who cares? So yeah. It makes sense. But
no, you're totally right.
It'll be interesting to see how that one sells. But, you know, there's been enough special editions of this game that I know sell really well whenever we post them about them on IGN. So this will probably do OK. Just to wrap up with a little bit more news, in case you didn't see after all of the leaks, the Mafia Trilogy collection is officially real. It includes Mafia 3 Definitive Edition, which is essentially Mafia 3 with all of its DLC. And if you own Mafia 3, the DLC packs, I believe, are now free. Mafia 2 Remastered Edition, which is the definitive remaster, that's available now. And then Mafia 1 is being fully remade by Hangar 13, who made Mafia 3. That's not coming out until August, but if you buy the trilogy now, you will get that later, or you can buy it separately. I've never played any of the Mafia games, so
I played a little bit of 2 and a little bit of 3. And the bummer about this one is that, one, it looks like it's being remade completely from the ground up. And 2, which is out today, is essentially a port of the PC version with like some of the bells and whistles. But the screenshots we saw from 1 look like a next gen game.
Yeah, seeing the 1 remake made me go like, oh, this is the level of like the Tony Hawk remaster or, you know, things of that remake. Stuff like that. Final Fantasy VII Remake obviously is gorgeous, but it wasn't a one-to-one. But yeah, this is Mafia 1 was the thing where I was like, I saw that and I'm like, I want to play that. I'm okay if I don't immediately jump on these remasters right now.
I'm like, I've always been a tough sell on Mafia stuff, like, or organized crime stuff in general. Like, it's sort of one of those things that I'm just like, nah, it doesn't really grab me. And then I've like gotten so into the Yakuza stuff that I'm kind of like, maybe I like it now. Like, maybe I'll go check out like the American Yakuza, the Mafia,
Italian American,
the Italian Yakuza,
Italian sushi.
They got this great ramen. You're gonna love it. It's all dried out. Instead of the soup, they put it in a tomato sauce. They got big balls of meat. They call it spaghetti. I don't know why I said that in the Italian. That's like not a Japanese. Anyway, no, the remake looks really gorgeous. And I don't know, like it's an open world that I've never been to before. And I'm kind of like, yeah, especially right now, I want to go explore new virtual places. Like things are so, we're so cooped up right now.
I know
that one's coming out
for a new open world game.
It's coming out right before the fall rush too, and I wish it was coming out like just a week or two earlier to give us kind of more of a window to play with it, because that remake does look so good. But I'm excited. I think we'll definitely talk about it once that comes out, but I haven't had any time with the remaster. I don't think you guys have played yet, so if you're playing, let us know. But just to go through a couple other news stories, we got a small little tidbit, or at least a hint, about the PS5 DualSense from Thomas Was Alone and John Wick Hex developer Mike Bithell, while he was talking on the show that he appears on, Play Watch Listen, hosted by IGN's former editor, the wonderful Alana Pierce.
Oh, and if you want to know why she's not on the show anymore, it's because she was in the Microsoft game, the Gears of War. So we don't. That's why we kicked her off the PlayStation show. Yeah.
Yeah, it's called social distancing.
Anyway, Bithell was on the show and said he was talking with Austin Wintory, the composer who's also on the show. They were talking about, looking forward to the Unreal Engine 5 demo, the PS5's Tempest audio engine, all of that stuff. And Bithell said he was Googling to find out if something had been announced yet before he replied to Austin, quote, "You're going to love what they're doing at with the controller on PS5 as well, with the DualSense haptic, the raindrops thing. I've had some demos. They're very good. You're going to have some fun, with that." So seemingly there's going to be something where the DualSense will recreate the feel of raindrops. I assume there will be some sort of, it's not surprising if they're saying, you'll be able to feel the mud you're tracking through, that you'd be able to feel rain or the rumble of a thunderstorm or things like that. But I'd be really interested to see how composers end up playing to that. If games like design feelings in the controller based on beats of the soundtrack, that could be really interesting to me.
That just gave me goosebumps. Like that sounds awesome.
The goosebumps is a different demo. That's when it gets spine tingling and you get the goose pimples on your flesh because of the specters.
The entire R.L. Stine classic book series will be available on PlayStation 5 on day one. We've confirmed it here.
God, I would love a goosebumps game for PlayStation
and 5. We should say that R.L. Stine used to be on this show. And so of course, a disclaimer, we do not condone any of his work.
Yeah,
he was the first person.
He used to come to the show all the time and he would spin spine tingling tales. So we kicked him off for being too spooky.
That's right. He told me my neighbor was a mummy.
And then Jack Black appeared and they made two movies out of it. And it was this whole thing.
That's right. They did.
Yeah. They made two whole movies. He was also the first person on the show to say Beyond. Fun fact.
That's right. And the F word.
Yeah. That's why we kicked him off too. Anyway, the only other bit of news I did want to mention was, if you want to go check out the full list of artists who are on the Tony Hawk Pro Skater remake soundtrack that was revealed last Friday, we have that up on IGN. There's been some debate that I was asked about on the graphic of all of the announced artists. It mentions the band Speed Dealer, but they had two songs in the original game, and Activision won't currently say what songs of theirs will be in the game. So I don't know what's going on there, but it sounds like maybe some deals are still being done for the soundtrack.
Okay.
Yeah, but they said right now, we reached out to Activision for comment, and they were like, that list is essentially confirming what artists will be on the track. So potentially there may be room for other tracks and whatnot, but we won't be playing that for another few months. So in the meantime, I want to know, Max and Brian, what have you guys been playing? Max, let's start with you.
So I jumped into the weird VR game, Gorn, which is like a ridiculous slapstick gladiator game for PSVR. It's been on other platforms first. It's from the, I forget the studio's name, but they did Broforce and something else that was equally silly. I'll give this game the benefit of the doubt, because I think I ran into the same issue where I was like, I finally have my PlayStation VR all perfectly set up, and then like the sun rose 2 degrees in the sky and suddenly my room was lit up and my calibration was all off. But it's basically like a really slapstick gladiator game where you fight these, and it's like, it's more fun than it looks. Like, it looks like it's really stupid, and it's, in reality, it's actually even stupider than that, but in a very hilarious way. Basically you get dropped in this, it's like sort of, I feel like a kind of Rick and Morty sensibility in terms of violence and character design, but you're in this like, you know, gladiatorial pit, and these big like hulking muscle men come at you and you just beat the shit out of them, and it's actually like pretty horrible. Like, there's times that I'm like, oh God, that's the cartilage in his nose, but it's like a, you know, like a child's drawing of like a ruined torso. But again, it's like one of those things where like I got really into it. I actually kind of hurt my hand because I accidentally whacked the side of my treadmill really hard, which you're not supposed to do in the game. That was an accident. But I kind of wish that I had full 360 tracking as opposed to having to like face one particular direction. But yeah, you just like you pick up different weapons. There's like it reminds me of like just kind of playing with silly role play toys when you were a kid, like, you know, that like those like sumo wrestler suits they would have at like birthday parties or like sock 'em boppers. It's kind of it does that thing where it kind of leans into the goofiness of VR and in a way that is interesting. Whereas we've got a lot of sort of shooting gallery and combat games where they try to be like, yes, this is the ultimate experience of hand to hand combat in a melee scenario. And this is like, yeah, but what if the mace was wiggly? Like, what if it was like, woo, 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 woo. So yeah, hopefully yeah, I can get it sort of recalibrated, but it's, you know, a silly good time.
Yeah. They, I just looked it up. They also made Genital Jousting.
There it is.
Oh, yeah.
Another floppy game.
Yeah. Max and I did an incredibly funny Let's Play of that they did not let us put up on IGN. And I wish we could find it because we were in tears laughing and cop was like, no.
You want to roll that in up at noon? I feel like everyone who shot that down doesn't work here anymore. So like,
do we have it?
It's got to be around here somewhere kicking around.
No, it doesn't.
It could be on a Google Drive or something.
I don't. How are you going to find that? You just search for genital on a Google Drive? You want to do that?
I'll just go on my work email, type in. Yeah. Just go at IGN.com/genitals. It's probably on there.
If we can find it, we'll put it up. I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something
what
to
are, add. What are they going to do? Make us work from home for 4 months straight?
It'll be 6 months. Anyway, Brian, what have you been playing? Anything in particular? Is it a quieter time?
Not a ton. Max and I played a lot of Maneater, which I don't think we can talk about yet, but
okay. Thumbs up. That comes out Friday, so we can talk about that next week for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a full disclosure, as long as we're disclosing everything and spilling our darkest secrets. We have a Maneater sponsored Up at Noon episode going up where we did a very ridiculous Let's Play. So if you want to get a feel for what that game's like, that'll be going up on it'll be happening Friday at 5 p.m. on IGN's channels.
Yeah, please watch that. We worked really hard on that. That was a big technical pain in the butt for Max and I to figure out how to do
it was a kind of a physical pain in the butt, too, because we wore fishermen's costumes.
That's true. I you didn't see this on camera, but I actually split my crotch because
it's good you couldn't see. I'm way too tall to be wearing things with like suspenders on them, so that just tugs it up in all sorts of weird bad ways.
I never think I have fat legs until I wear yellow pants, and then all is revealed. That's why I don't
pants. Does that happen every few months where you're like, oh yeah, my legs?
Well, yellow pants. I was actually Big Bird for one summer in 1996, gotcha. And then I got fired.
Haven't we all?
Yes, orange pants.
Speaking of Let's Plays, though, I know a lot of people have been asking. We haven't been able to get back together, obviously, because of all the shelter in place orders. So we are still keeping the Bloodborne Let's Play on hold until we can shoot more, because we don't want to put an episode out and then have 6 months of silence on it.
That seems unnecessarily cruel. I think we should just put it up.
Yeah, we can
give people a thing to watch.
We're workshopping on the air right now, but maybe we can figure out a way to just play it remotely. That's what millions of people have figured out how to do that.
Do people do that on the internet?
I think a couple of people on the internet have played video games without being in the same room together.
Interesting. We should look into that. Red, our producer who's on this call, if you can Google that for us, that would be great. See if anyone's done that. But yeah, I'm down to figure that out. It seems like we're going to be in this situation for a little bit longer. And so if we can make a more episodes of that show, I'd definitely love to, because that was a great time.
Oh, I played more Bloodborne.
Oh.
Yeah. I got to one of the last bosses, and I was like,
did you beat the DLC?
No, I didn't. I'm not gonna beat the DLC. I'm not gonna beat that guy.
Max.
I'm not gonna beat that. You know I'm not gonna beat that guy. You come help me fight that man.
Which guy?
I got to fight the guy on the beach, and I got to fight the horse in the church that's on fire. And both of those are really hard, and not enough people have the DLC. I just want to finish the game. I want to finish it.
Everybody has the DLC. You could beat the horse in the church. You will not beat the man on the beach without calling a stranger on the internet. You just won't. I'm sorry. I love you. You just won't.
I know. That's what I'm saying, is I go in there and I ring my bell until my arm falls off, and he still kicks my ass. I can't beat the little man on the beach.
You got to do it. It gets so cool after that.
Nasty, wet Billy in the sand.
Wait, you didn't beat the horse?
I didn't beat the horse. No, wait, I beat the first horse in the church, but then you go to the different church and there's the other horse that's on fire. He's more of like a wolf, I guess. You know? You know what I'm talking about?
No, he's not that bad.
The one that was on fire.
He's not that bad.
Okay, well, I just would...
Did you beat the lady that lives at the top of the clock tower?
Yeah, I kicked her ass. I did great on her. I beat her a second try. I was very proud of myself.
And you can't beat the dog?
The one who's on... The dog was on fire.
Just forget it. Just...
No, this is great. This is the most video game who's on first conversation. it's maybe it's spoilery. I don't know, but hopefully I'll get there someday.
Us saying stupid animals and then an element.
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good From Software boss generator. Just add element and.
Did you fight the wind goat?
Anyway, as we're wrapping up the show, I do want to jump into a memory card story. Memory card, of course, is our weekly segment where you, the viewers and listeners at home, write in with your wacky, weird, sad, funny, whatever memories of your video gaming life, and we read them on the show. This one this week comes from Hyro from the Bronx, New York, and as they wrote in their email, pizza, as all Bronx residents say.
I miss New York pizza so bad right now.
I do too. God. Hyro said, love the podcast. I've been listening for a long time. My best friend, Arnaldo, whom I've known for 15 years now, worked at a mom and pop game store when we were in middle school. First of all, we were all super jealous that a 13-year-old could pull off a job. They've got connections. Our love for video games really flourished at the time. All we did was talk about games in class. Anyway, the date was November 17th, 2004, and as some of you may know, it was the US release date of Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater for the PlayStation 2. Now, for some context here, Arnaldo and I are huge Metal Gear fans, so this highly anticipated release was all we ever thought of for the past few months. The morning of, a few of our friends, Arnaldo and I, made the plan to run after school to the game store he worked at to purchase the game. We knew we had to be fast based on pre-order projections from that store. As soon as the bell rang, we ran towards the exit. As I was running, I didn't see my friend Arnaldo anywhere, and as we continued running, I saw a bus whip out next to us outside. Inside that bus was Arnaldo waving at us with a huge grin on his face. I knew he would beat us to it. We got to the game store, and there he was behind the counter with a disappointed look on his face as he said they just sold the last copy. I didn't even think twice about it and quickly made a run out to another game store about a mile away. I walked into the other game store out of breath and asked the clerk for a copy. He looked at me and said, "We don't have any more and won't until tomorrow." Defeated in my efforts, I walked back to Arnaldo's game store, daydreaming about how I want to just stroll through the jungles of Russia. I assume that's in the game. I walk into the store, and there was Arnaldo with what seems to be about 20 copies of Metal Gear Solid 3 for the PlayStation 2 on top of the counter with his hand on it, and he says, "Gotcha. Thank you so much, and keep up the great work." That friend and mine now do a Metal Gear podcast.
Oh, that's amazing. Shout out to your Metal Gear podcast.
I'll give them a shout out. It's called Under the Cardboard Box Podcast.
That rules.
Very good.
Sorry you had to run a mile there. In fact, that sounds like a pain. I'm trying to think of what video games I would do that for, like just fueled by pure adrenaline.
You did stuff like that for your Switch.
Yeah. I'm done. That's there. Fair.
I'll do it for probably the PS5, depending on if there's scarcity. Anyway, before we wrap, also want to do a That One Thing from Michael this week wrote in. That One Thing is another one of our weekly segments where the viewers and listeners at home write in and let us know about what about a game really stuck with them and has made it one of their favorites of all time. Michael said, "I'm 34 and have had every PlayStation in my life, but there is one little stupid mini game that has always stuck with me. Suikoden 2 on PS1 had a cooking competition that I played the hell out of that got you nothing except a random chef's life story." And that's a short and sweet one, but I just love the idea. Like I've totally become addicted to like a specific mini game or a specific part of a game, and then you just get some character detail. It doesn't really win you anything in the end. But when you love a game, it makes sense to get deep into that stuff.
Yeah, it happens. Anyway,
as we're running short on time, unfortunately, I want to get to next week. I'll bring up some of the Ghost of Tsushima reactions. I'm sorry we're running out of time for that, but we'll read those on next week's show. Before we do wrap up, of course, we realize we're getting nearer to episode 650. We're only a few episodes away. And of course, did want to mention, given the current parameters of life in San Francisco and much of the world, we're probably not going to be doing anything in person So stay tuned for plans. We'll be working on stuff, but yeah, don't expect any sort of announcement of an in-person event for 650. But other than that, you can find us all on Twitter. I'm at JM Dornbush, Brian is at Agent Bizzle, and Max is at Max Scoville. Normally Beyond is live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific at beyond.ign.com, youtube.com/IGN Beyond, and your favorite podcast services. You can catch us otherwise on IGN.com and youtube.com/IGN. But that pretty much wraps us up for episode 646. Thank you, Max. Thank you, Brian. Thank you to Red, our producer. Thank you to Lucy, wherever you may be. She was just busy. She'll be back soon. But anyway, thank you so much for listening and or watching to this episode. And as always, Beyond.
Beyond. Nice.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.